pitch the ball to Bell. That's upfield. 40, 45, 50, 45, 40. He's in the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Cowboys. What a run.
Kicks it left wing, Lucas. Three-point jumper. Good. 6 seconds. Cowboys win! Cowboys win! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four! Pistols firing! Touchdown, Oklahoma State!
Welcome to our two-part podcast. In part one, we talked to assistant PGA professional Brian Seal about Oklahoma State's recent college golf victory in Las Vegas. And in part two, we talked to Q as he breaks down the NIT and previews the Oklahoma State-Harvard game. Let's go ahead and get to part one.
Okay, well, we are here on the podcast today to talk about Oklahoma State's golf victory last weekend. We have Brian Seal, who's the assistant professional at Southern Highlands Golf Club. Welcome to the podcast, Brian.
How we doing?
Oh, not bad. Just excited about OSU's victory. First of all, why don't you talk a little bit about who you work for and kind of where you're from and how you got to where you're at now?
Well, I'm originally from Northern Nevada. Came to school in Las Vegas to pursue a PGA membership as well as to get my college degree. And then basically that what you have to do is you go to school for 4.5 years, and then you have internships in the summer. And then once you graduate with your degree and your PGA classification. So basically when I graduated, I started working at Southern Highlands, ended up becoming the assistant professional. And last year during the tournament, I thought it'd be pretty cool if we started a Twitter page for the college golf tournament. We did that. I think we were pretty good. We had, I think, 230 followers for our Twitter page then. And then this year, my goal is to get it to 500, but we only got it to, I think, 450, but right. That's where we're at. So,
well, it was kind of an interesting way to follow. I guess the tournament's called the Southern Highlands Collegiate Masters, I'm correct. And it was really an interesting way to follow the tournament. Because obviously there's not a lot of televised college golf other than the U.S. Amateur and stuff like that. But do you think that more tournaments around the country will start adopting that strategy as far as getting the word out there on their tournament?
I think there's already two of them that do it. I think Isleworth down in Orlando does it. And then this year I noticed a tournament up in Washington did it too. But I think we were definitely the first. So
okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. Now this Southern Highlands, which is where the tournament was held, is for the listeners that don't know, is a very prestigious golf course out in Nevada. Can you talk a little bit about, I've read that it only has 300 members. There's a lot of, famous people, actors, athletes, whoever. What's the atmosphere like at that golf club?
Honestly, it's kind of, the best part about Southern Highlands is if you join, anything that you want, we can get for you. Everything that we do is customized is tailored to what you want. We do have about 300 members. We do have a few people that are pretty famous, but it's mostly just, business people. And, for some people it's their second home in Las Vegas. They live here in the spring and the fall. But really, what we do out there is we have a great golf course. It's always in great condition. And, say if you always want feed in your golf cart when you come out, we'll have feed in your golf cart when you come out, and it'll always be that way. So, I mean, that's kind of about what we do.
Who's the most famous person that plays out there?
I would probably have to say Reggie Jackson.
Really?
Actually, it's kind of a tie because I like Greg Maddux, but it's probably Reggie Jackson.
Okay, so Greg, so do all the do Smoltz and all those guys play out there?
Mr. Maddux just recently joined, but I'm a big Braves fan, so I'm hoping he brings Smoltz and Glavin out. So
that's pretty neat. Well, what's Let's talk a little bit about the tournament. For all the, why don't you go ahead and explain for all the listeners who don't know how college golf tournaments work, how, what the setup is, because a lot of listeners are probably used to watching the PGA Tour, four rounds, individual play only, but why don't you explain a little bit about the college format?
Okay, well, the biggest difference between professional golf and college golf that you'll have is college golf, or excuse me, professional golf, you play four rounds, stroke play, that's it. College golf, almost always a shorter format. It's 18 holes, it's 18 holes, but it's only three rounds. And basically, there's five guys on a team, but only four scores count. So basically, if you have one guy that plays really bad that day for the team, that score doesn't count.
Right.
Well, the problem we had this week is three teams this week, two on Friday and one yesterday, who had kids get sick.
So they're playing with only four guys?
Yeah, they're playing four guys for four scores, and I mean, that really puts you behind the eight ball because there's no room for error if you play bad. And actually, Cal on Friday, they had four guys for four scores, and they still finished like third. It was pretty impressive, to be honest.
Wow. Well, going into the tournament, you had Oklahoma State ranked, I believe, number two, Cal at 22, and A&M at number 10. And mm-hmm. those were kind of the three teams that emerged as the tournament headed into the weekend. Set up for the listeners who haven't read about it, set up going into the final day, what the situation was as far as the leaderboard.
Well, Cal really really emerged on Saturday to take a big final round lead. And honestly, going on to the back nine, Cal was up by 10 on Oklahoma State, and I think Texas A&M was down by 12 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, once the players got through 10, 11, which are pretty hard holes, and then 12, which had a tough pin in small par three, all of a sudden, Oklahoma State was up by one.
How does the format work as far as player, like, do all the Oklahoma State guys play together, or how do the pairings work?
Well, actually, we got really lucky yesterday. So basically, the top three teams, those three teams will play with each other that day,
okay,
whichever day it is. So yesterday you had Cal, A&M, and Oklahoma State all in the same group.
Uh-huh.
So they all kind of knew what was going on. And even better than that is the top three individuals, Stephen Hale from Cal, Morgan Hoffman from Oklahoma State, and who am I missing? Oh, Jordan Russell from Texas A&M, sorry. They all played together yesterday, so they all knew exactly what was going on as far as the individual lead as well. So that kind of made it interesting.
So what do you think happened on the back nine? Was it just a matter of OSU has more experience playing out there? I know they played out there before. What was kind of the determining factor for them having such a big swing on the back nine?
Well, you know, the biggest problem for Cal is they made some big numbers on the back nine yesterday. I think they had a triple, a quadruple, and two doubles on the back. And I mean, when you have that, and Oklahoma State's making par, you're going to make up shots pretty quickly.
Right.
And I mean, yesterday the stellar play from Hoffman, who was just steady Eddie this week, to go along with Ewan and Tway, actually, they played pretty good yesterday. And Ewan, that was his first round under par ever at Southern Highlands, so they came through in a big way yesterday. So
yeah, I saw that. That Peter Uihlein, the overall number one college player right now, he put up a 77-76 on Friday and Saturday. What's up with his struggles out there? Does he not fit well in that course? What's the issue there?
You know, I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, I follow college golf pretty regularly, and you watch all these scores, and he's always in the top three, top five, top ten. And then he comes out here, and there was no – the first – 2 days, there was no wind, no nothing. It was just absolutely perfect, and he just struggled. I was shocked when I saw it was 9 over par after 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I couldn't put my finger on it, especially when the kid that's number two in the rankings, Patrick Cantlay, he was playing good. I think he was 200 par after 2 days. And, you know, so it looked like he was going to be able to jump Ewan this week in the rankings, but Ewan played pretty good yesterday, so I don't think Ewan's going to get jumped this week, but
yeah,
you know, I don't know what it is. Southern Highlands is one of those golf courses that if you're not very familiar with it, or if it doesn't suit your eye, I mean, you can make some big numbers out there. You know, we had the rough at 4.5 to 5 inches by the end of the week. Plus the greens are rolling about 12 on the stint meter. So, I mean, it doesn't take much to make a big number out there. So
how do those numbers compare to U.S. Open conditions in terms of rough and the stint meter?
I would say compared to U.S. Open conditions, the rough is very familiar, and the greens, ours were probably a little bit faster because late in the afternoon we had some of the rough that, we had the greens that were, the wind dried them out towards the end of the day yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They were probably rolling a little bit faster than 12, which, I mean, that's lightning, so.
Yeah, like putting on a cement block or something.
It's like putting on marble.
Well, you mentioned Morgan Hoffman, who was the individual medalist, and he mm-hmm. he actually kind of has a history on that course. I think he set the course record in 2009.
Yep.
And does he still hold that record?
He does. It's a 62, and he shot it on his second round ever on that golf course as a freshman.
Wow.
And, you know, so there's obviously something about Southern Hounds that fits his eye because, I mean, every year he comes there, and last year he can throw out the scores because there was some weird weather conditions last year. But in 2009 and this year, I mean, he's just been impressive out there. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where if he comes out next year, don't be surprised if he wins. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what it is, but, you know, the biggest thing I'll say about Morgan this week was he had an ankle brace on, and I finally found out that he had some torn ligaments in his ankle. And after the round, he'd ice it for an hour every day. I mean, it's – and plus, you're out there walking, and it's a long walk out there, too. There's a lot of elevation. And, you know, at the end of the day, he was limping around a little bit, and he'd have his ice on. And even when he went down to pick his ball up out of the hole, he'd barely bend his ankle. So you could tell he was hurting pretty bad.
Well, yeah, I actually read some of your stuff on the tournament, and – apparently, you had reported that he had injured that in an intramural basketball game.
Yeah, that's what his dad, one of the titles for us, were talking about that before he teed off yesterday. And I'm like, really? And he's like, his dad said, I don't think he'd be playing much basketball anytime soon.
Yeah, Coach McGraw will probably put an end to any intramural antics that
I would imagine.
That Morgan is undertaking.
Especially with the national championship in Stillwater at Carson Creek this year. So.
Yeah, you talk about that. That's coming up here pretty quickly. What's, I mean, do you look at OSU as kind of the favorite? I mean, obviously they have to be the favorite, ranked number two, and it's on their home course. Is that how you see it, or who do you see contending for that?
If OSU doesn't win the national title this year, I would be shocked. From what I've heard, Carson Creek's similar to Southern Highlands in the fact that if you're not all that familiar with the golf course, you'll struggle on it.
Right.
And so, you know, familiarity to that golf course is going to play a big part in who plays well there. And I highly doubt anybody knows it better than the Cowboys.
Right.
And, you know, they should have won the last two national titles. They won the stroke play. I think they've won the stroke play the last 2 years in the national title by 60 shots, and then they lost it in match play. So.
Yeah, well, I know they lost to Augusta State last year, and I can't remember the year before that. It might have been UNLV or
I think it might have been UCLA that won it 2 years ago. I can't remember.
Okay. Well, yeah, just going back to the end of the Southern Highlands tournament. What would you say that Cal lost the tournament more, or OSU won it? How would you put that in perspective?
Oklahoma State has absolutely won it. You know. To get around that golf course, it's the same way at any golf course. You got to avoid the big numbers, and Oklahoma State did that all day yesterday. All their kids played good. The freshman Taylor Gooch, he struggled a little bit, but I mean, when you count, I think they had a 69, 270s, and a 74. I mean, that's pretty good out there, especially with our Sunday pins and everything else. So,
yeah, that's outstanding on a Sunday. Is that? Do you feel like that's something that Coach McGraw really stresses, is being steady? Does Oklahoma State try to put up big scores, or do they just try to play steady and let everybody else come back to them? What did you see as their strategy whenever they were playing on Sunday?
You know, out there we usually have four or five tough pins, and then four or five easy pins, and then the rest kind of intermediate pins where, you know, they could be tough depending on where you put your ball on the green. And Oklahoma State, it just seems like they want to go out and play golf, and if they play well, they'll play well, and they'll go from there. You know, the thing about Oklahoma State is they were still, I think, fourth or fifth after the first day, and Uline and Tway were a combined 12 over.
Yeah.
So you knew that, and especially coming into Sunday when they were third, that if they played well, if Tway and Uline played well, it was over.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happened.
Right.
So.
Well, yeah, it was a big weekend for Oklahoma State golf. They had Ricky Fowler and Hunter Mahan obviously finished 8th and 9th at the Cadillac tournament. And then they had a couple guys. Well, another one of their guys won the Puerto Rico tournament on the PGA Tour. And
Michael Bradley, yep.
Yeah, Michael Bradley. And then Chris Tiblin finished, I believe, 7th, who's also an OSU alum in that Puerto Rico tournament. So it was a pretty big weekend for OSU golf.
That's a solid weekend.
Yeah, and not a bad outing. I wouldn't mind seeing that here at Augusta here in a couple weeks. Well, Brian, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for your updates all weekend on the golf tournament, and look forward to it next year. We'll have to chat again, and I'll give you a shout out whenever we post this podcast on our Twitter account.
Thanks, Kyle. If you need anything, let us know. All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Goodbye.
Bye.
And now here is part two as Q and I break down the NIT. Okay, Q. Welcome to the podcast. Wanted to talk a little bit of NIT basketball with you. I know that's probably not our favorite thing this time of year.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing, but you know, you see what happens to Colorado. I don't think some of those wins we might have had may not have made a difference, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you look at them, and I think they finished 8-8, beat K-State 3 times, beat Texas. I mean,
what do you want from them, really?
Yeah. I mean, I know their schedule was weak, but anyway, we're not here to talk about the past. I guess my question to you about Oklahoma State, obviously they have Harvard coming up. We're taping this on a Monday night, so they got Harvard coming up on Tuesday night. If you're OSU, or I guess not if you're OSU, but as yourself, would you rather OSU win the NIT or just lose out in the first round and get the thing over with?
No, I mean, I'd definitely rather him win out. That's a kind of an asinine question, I think.
Well, I'm just asking it in terms of, it's been somewhat of a painful season. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah, but if you're saying, I mean, the question is, would you rather have him win it or lose in the first round? Well, I mean, that's kind of dumb. I mean, obviously, I would think any OSU fan would want him to go ahead and win it. There's definitely some benefit to winning the NIT. Now, if you would have asked me, would you rather win 2 games and lose the third one, or just lose the first one? And that's a better question.
That's a better question. You just all credibility that you had in making me look like a fool was just thrown out the window with when you said that's a more better question.
Wow. Oh, man.
Okay, well, our poll question up on the site right now, and if you're listening to this, go ahead, go to the site, log in. You don't have to do anything to log in. You just go there.
you just type in the words pistolsfiringblog.com into your address bar and hit enter.
And while we're here, let me take some time and apologize for the site being down. I'm working on it. I'm trying to get it fixed. If you've tried to go in the last day or two and it's been down, I apologize. We'll refund you at the end of the year. Poll question right now, is OSU going to make the Final Four of the NIT? What's your answer to that?
My answer is yes, for a couple of reasons, namely Keaton Page and Marshall Moses.
Okay.
I think the key to the NIT is teams that really want to keep playing basketball, teams that love playing, and teams that really want to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those two guys, every time they step on the floor, they compete and they battle, and they're guys that want to win and they love the game. So I feel like when those are your two leaders, I feel like you're at least going to keep competing. You're at least going to keep playing hard. And I look at their bracket from a talent standpoint. I don't see why they aren't as good or better talent-wise than all the other 7 teams in their region or their bracket or whatever it's called. So for that reason, plus you throw in, you've got a couple other guys who are hungry, and Pilgrim, who's, you know, talked about wanting to play professionally. So he's still trying to kind of show people what he can do. And Roger Dow wants to continue to build on his resume to probably secure minutes for next season. And I just think OSU is a hungrier team than a lot of these other teams will be. I mean, Colorado is the type of team in the NIT that you wonder, okay, are they just going to be pissed and now they want it to be over because they didn't get the goal that they really wanted or should have gotten?
Right.
Or, you know, sometimes a team like that comes out and wants to prove something. But, you know, you look at a team like, you know, California, they're 7-14. I mean, do you think those guys really want to play anymore? I mean, I think they probably want it to be over.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. I was talking to Nolo about it today, and we were talking about how back in the Eton era, whenever those guys were playing for Sean, I mean, they would talk about how they hated the NIT. They didn't want to play in it. I think that was the year we lost to Southern Illinois.
Okay.
And then you look at – there's a quote in today's Tulsa World about how Marshall Moses is saying, you know, I'll play basketball year-round. I'll play basketball for Travis Ford whenever he wants me to. And you know, yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with how motivated the coach can get the guys to play in the NIT.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of it comes down to coaching and guys, you know, does the coach have the personality that he demands and the guys give him, you know, 100% effort every time they step on the floor? And I think Ford has proven that all 3 years he's been here, that his guys always come out and compete. So yeah. I don't think there's any reason to think they're going to come out and do anything less than that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, now looking at Harvard, first of all, can you name a Harvard player? Without getting on their website right now, as I'm watching.
Last year, didn't they have an Asian guy that went to play for the Warriors?
They did. Can you name him?
I'm going to go with Tommy Liu, L-I-U. Is that right?
It's actually Jeremy Lin.
Oh, that was close.
Yeah, kind of. And you know who
starts Harvard, with an L.
Well, you know who Harvard's coach is, right?
Yeah, it's Tommy Amaker.
Okay. Do you know where he used to coach?
Yeah, I'm not an idiot. He used to coach. Yeah,
well, I was getting ready to say I'm being very condescending right now, and I didn't mean for it to sound like that. I was kind of asking leading questions for you to inform the listeners of where Tommy Amaker used to coach.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, Tommy Amaker used to coach at Michigan. Before that, he was an assistant for Coach K at Duke. I think a lot of people, when he left Duke, I think some people might have thought he might even be the heir apparent to Coach K, that he might go off somewhere like a Michigan and kind of do his thing. And then when Coach K retired, he might come back. I think it's safe to say that's not going to happen, but he's gone up to Harvard and done a nice little job. He's got a team that's 23-6 and just lost a heartbreaker to Princeton. I mean, you look at a team like Harvard, that's a team that is going to want to play. I mean, those guys are students first, athletes second. So, high character guys, anytime they step on the floor, they're going to want to play. So a chance for them to win three games and shock the NIT world and get to New York City, I mean, that would mean the world to them. So, I mean, I expect the Crimson to come out and play hard.
Can I interrupt you and ask, are you trying to break the the record for most cliches used in one monologue about an Ivy League school?
I don't know if you caught it right there, but throughout that little breakdown I was trying to give, I almost lost it. I almost broke character. I mean, that's just hard to do. It's hard to break down teams in the NIT, and B, it's hard to break down Ivy League teams.
While we're here, they did beat Colorado by 16, I think, earlier this year. Okay.
Yeah.
At Harvard. Mm-hmm. They beat Boston College, I believe.
Which well for them again. I mean, you know, if they've got their eyes on the Big Apple, they know that they might have to go through Boston College. So
yeah, it's true. And they played UConn. I think they got blown out. They lost by 3 at Michigan. Mm-hmm. So I mean, they've got a good team. I don't really understand. I mean, you saw the Princeton highlights. You know that they were, you know, 0.1 seconds away from getting in the tournament. And yet they're still on the bubble. You know, a lot of teams, I mean, kind of on the bubble. They probably weren't going to get in, but they're being talked about. How are they a 6 seed in the NIT?
Yeah, the NIT is kind of dumb. I mean, I think some of the seeds are based more on, well, I say that, but then a Cleveland State. I say that, and then Cleveland State is hosting a game, and so is Colorado State. So, you know, I don't know what really goes on in the minds of the NIT committee. I'm sorry.
Can, Do we need to start this over? 3, 2.
Oh my gosh! Coming back. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Okay. Yeah, I don't really know why or how Harvard would be a 6 seed in the NIT.
This is falling apart faster than OU's basketball program.
Which is pretty fast.
Why did it?
How bad does Capel wish he would have taken a job 2 years ago after Blake left, by the way?
Well, was he offered a job?
I thought he was high on the Arizona list that ended up going to Sean Miller. Maybe I'm wrong, but I always think that he was.
No, you're right. I don't know.
I don't know that he ever was offered and turned it down. I just.
Well, I also don't know that he was ever as high as Sean Miller was. I mean.
Maybe not. I just think it's kind of funny because it's like, oh, you. I don't know. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about why Harvard's a 6 seed in the NIT tournament.
Well, you've already broken that down pretty extensively. How about we talk about how does Baylor?
Yeah, this is good stuff.
How does Baylor go 7-9? I think they went 7-9. I mean, they're on the bubble until the last, you know, until Perry Jones gets suspended, then they get blown out by OU in the first round of the Big 12 tournament, and they don't even get an NIT invitation.
Right. I mean, it seems pretty unfathomable, really. I guess the only thing that you could kind of say is maybe the NCAA didn't want to mess with them because of the Perry Jones situation. I mean, the NCAA runs the NIT now, and so there are at least better rules to how teams get invites than there used to be. Because it used to be basically the NIT just, you know, they got teams in there who they thought could draw decent crowds so they could make money. Well, now the NCAA has it so that teams are in there who are basically, you know, ideally the next 32 best teams.
Right.
And so I don't think that the NCAA is maybe saying that Baylor's not one of the next 32 best teams, but maybe they're saying, look, with the Perry Jones situation, we don't want Baylor being talked about. We don't want to have to have that be a news story. We don't want, I think that's the only main reason. And maybe they look at the fact that they had 2 wins that weren't D1 wins. Maybe that kind of invalidates their chances as well. What do you think?
Well, I think the situation is really interesting because there's more to the story than what's going on. You don't go from literally being on the bubble the last weekend of the, I mean, if you beat Texas at home on with College Game Day there, you're in the NCAA tournament, and you don't go from that to out of the NIT just because you lose to OU in the first round of the Big 12. There's something more to the story, and the Perry Jones thing, I've read a lot about it. I've read, you know, all the articles that are out there about it. I've read them, and I don't really understand it. Like
you're reading all those articles because you want to find something that you can go to the NCAA and say, well, then why'd you screw Dez? Don't you? Isn't that what you want?
I mean, I've belabored that point far beyond what it needed, but I guess I just don't understand the relationship right now between Baylor and the NCAA. I don't get it. Like, do they hate each other? Is the NCAA trying to punish them? Is Baylor undermining the NCAA? There's something going on that I think is going to come out in the next few years. And I don't know if it's going to be, you know, pro Baylor or, you know, the NCAA is screwing them over. I don't know. What do you think about everything that's going on there?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, it, you know, you kind of coined this phrase. You're the first person I heard it from anyway, calling them Paler with a P, as in paycheck. You started calling them that last fall. And there's too many odd things that why would guys all of a sudden want to start going to Waco? I mean, it's not like it's a basketball renaissance where there's this great tradition there or something. And all of a sudden these huge, you know, 4- and 5-star athletes want to go there. That doesn't make any sense. So you kind of have to, you know, raise an eyebrow to what Scott Drew might be doing behind the scenes, or, you know, other people, whatever. So
yeah, but then you read
I agree with you. I think that something bigger must be going on than just the Perry Jones deal.
Yeah, but you read the stuff about Perry Jones, and it's like, what? They didn't do anything wrong. I mean, it's very, like, very much looks like the NCAA is out to get them. So I don't know if, like you said, like if we just haven't seen everything yet or what the deal is. But I don't know. We don't need to spend the whole podcast talking about
Now, I've got a question for you. Just a quick yes or no. Have you filled out an NIT bracket?
No.
Do you have one in front of you right now?
Yes.
Can you give me your NIT Final Four right now? Go.
Well, I actually don't have it in front of me right now. I'm going to have to go to NIT.com if that's even a website, and it's not. And I just got like 87 pop-ups on my computer. So that's not good.
You need an NIT bracket, go to pistolsfiringblog.com.
Yeah, I've got it on my own blog. I don't even know how to get there. But okay, yeah, I've got it.
While you find that, I'll give you my Final Four for the NIT.
Okay.
This is totally off the cuff. I haven't filled out an NIT bracket, but we ought to write these down and just take note of them on March 31st when the champion is crowned. In the top left region of your bracket.
It doesn't even get a name. It's just the top left region.
It's the top left region. I'm taking Missouri State in the top left region.
Okay.
In the bottom left region, I'm taking St. Mary's in the bottom left region.
You okay?
Yeah, I think I said Ralph Friedgen.
Yeah, I think he did too.
In the bottom right region, I'm going to take Virginia Tech, which I'm a little nervous about that. I think that Seth Greenberg, I think his middle name is Bubble, and I think he's been to more NITs than Paris Hilton has.
This ought to be good. Or do you have any idea where you're going with this?
No, I got nothing. I'm just going to stop. So that's Virginia Tech in the bottom right region. And then in the top right, I'm going to Oklahoma State.
Okay.
So that's a Final Four of Oklahoma State versus Virginia Tech and St. Mary's against Missouri State. In the finals, I've got OSU playing Missouri State. Two you know, kind of regional rivals. If you look at Stillwater and Springfield, Missouri, only about 4 or 5 hours away.
Is that where Missouri State is in Springfield?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it used to be Southwest Missouri State. It used to have a perennially phenomenal women's program at Missouri State. Also, Steve Alford, who's now at New Mexico, was the coach there before he went to Iowa.
Okay.
And I'm going to say the Pokes win it all. Travis Ford does what he couldn't do with his UMass Minutemen, and he cuts down the nets in New York.
Yeah, there is precedence with T.
Yeah,
Ford.
He's been there. He knows what it takes to win NIT games and to go to New York. And if they need help, you know, knowing how to cut down the net in New York, I can help them with that because I actually did cut down a piece of the Madison Square Garden net actually 10 years ago this March.
Okay, that's good. I'm happy for you.
Well, I mean, just throwing it out there. Now, have you done that before?
No, I haven't. I actually played athletics in college rather than managed them.
That's fine.
Okay, I've got in the top left region. I mean, is that really what it's called?
That's what we're calling it, the top left region.
The top left region. I feel like I hurt your feelings there with the comment about playing college athletics.
You didn't. I've got a wealth of experiences and NIT championship ring and two trips to the NCAA tournament where I got to sit on the bench and experience that. I mean, I didn't play, but that's fine. I mean, won a football intramural championship my junior year at Tulsa. You know, I want to. Shamrock softball tournament with you as this, the center field rover.
The time that and we really, if we could ever have Whedon on here, I'd like to talk to him about the time
that would be phenomenal.
That he hit a ball, and I'm telling you, I mean, he hit this ball. It seriously had to have been 450 feet.
Yeah, I was pitching, and he just launched one. It was unbelievable. I still don't know how we beat them, but the best part of that, and I'll just tell a quick story, and hopefully we can get him on someday, maybe after he's in the league, in the NFL. But it's the last inning, and we're up either I think it was either 3 or 4, but the bases are loaded. Now, I'm just putting him on. Like, I'm going to go ahead and just surrender that run, and that's fine. we've got two outs and we'll get the next guy. And he didn't like the first three that I'm intentionally walking him. So he steps across the plate to try and hit.
Which I'm not even sure if that's illegal.
It may not be, but the fourth ball, he steps across the plate and just crushes it. And I'm pretty sure you caught it on the warning track to end the game.
Yeah, I did. And
but I was so nervous because I was like, he didn't just hit my intentional fourth ball onto field two, but it was close.
Okay,
back to the top left region. Yeah,
top left region. I've got Alabama. I think Anthony Grant's the kind of coach that can get his guys up for an NIT run. I really like him.
I like that.
As you remember, I was a big proponent of him coming to Stillwater after Sean Sutton.
Yep.
Bottom left region. I've got. By the way, California is 17-14, not 7-14.
is that what I said?
Yeah, I had no idea what you were talking about. I've got St. Mary's also. I like the Gales. I like Patty. What's his last name? Patty Mills.
I'm pretty sure he graduated last year, didn't he?
No, he did, but that's the only player. That's the only alumnus I know of anybody in that region. Not really, but I've got Oklahoma State out of the top right region. Like you said, I think Ford's going to have them up. I think they'll be ready to go. And then out of the bottom right, I'm going to go with Dayton. They're always feisty in these postseason events.
Okay.
And then I've got a little OSU-Alabama rematch in New York City, and I actually have Alabama winning it all.
All right, roll tide.
Yeah, roll tide. But I'll be excited if OSU's playing in the NIT championship. I know, you know, it's not the ideal postseason situation, but it'll be good for this team.
It will be. and it's too bad that there probably won't be a great crowd there tomorrow, and it's spring break, so they can't get the students to come out for free or something. So I just hope those guys come out and play hard. And
well, yeah, I mean, tickets are $4 and $8, so if you're not at the game, then you shouldn't be allowed to ever go to anything again.
Yeah.
That's probably a strong statement. But I was at the game against Marist in 07 or 06.
We just mailed it in. Like, literally during the game, we just pretty much quit.
Yeah, I think, actually, Mario Bogan took a photo of the game and put it in an envelope and actually put a stamp on it and gave it to a mailman that was in the crowd. That's how bad it was.
That was the weirdest analogy I've ever heard. I hope that... Are you scared a little bit what Mario Bogan would do if he heard this pistol cast? Because you just called him out. You just basically said, they quit. I'm talking about you, Mario Bogan. And you just pointed right at him.
Well, I am. I mean, Sean called him out. He got benched for the entire second half.
Yeah. Is he still playing in Europe? We ought to look that up.
I don't.
Have you ever tried to look at those Europe Basketball League websites? They're like, it's like reading hieroglyphics, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's like... I don't know what it's like. I was going to say something inappropriate, but then I remember that we might have kids listening. So,
well, I mean, I've already made more mistakes on this pistol cast tonight than Brad Womack made on the whole season of The Bachelor. So,
so we're getting a Bachelor reference in. That's good. I'm sure our
I'm throwing other, it out there for our female listeners.
Yeah. All one of them, two actually, both of whom we need to get on the podcast.
That's right.
Okay, Q. Well, thanks for breaking down the NIT with me. We'll be back tomorrow, either tomorrow or Thursday, with a two-part mega NCAA tournament podcast with a couple surprise guests. And be sure to look for all of our tournament info on pistolsfiringblog.com.
Make sure you sign up for the Pistols Firing Blog Bracket Challenge as well.
Yes. That is currently up on... the blog, on the website, and you can win a Desmond Mason autograph. So
get out there.
Awesome. Yeah. Get out there. Tell your friends. Tell your enemies.
Try it.
Wrap it up.
Deuces.
See ya.